Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, July 5th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Opinion. City of Midland has final candidate for city manager. By Lori Blong, Mayor, Dan Corrales, City Council, and Robin Poole, City Council. Over the last several months, the Midland City Council has carried out an exhaustive search for the best candidate to serve as Midland's next city manager. We are proud to announce this search has resulted in a final candidate for consideration by the City Council. We want to offer an introduction of Tommy Gonzalez to Midlanders before the City Council meets to make a final decision regarding our hire. Not only do we believe we have found a candidate who will meet the needs of our growing city, but we truly believe his extensive experience and proven track record exceed the expectations we collectively held as a council. Tommy Gonzalez is a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel, an outstanding alumnus of Eastern New Mexico University, a Texas Tech Distinguished Alumnus, and a Lean Six Sigma Black Belt from the University of Texas. Mr. Gonzalez's background and resume demonstrate he can provide the executive leadership necessary to carry out the mission, goals, and policies established by the City Council. Most recently, Mr. Gonzalez has managed the City of El Paso's annual $1 billion operations budget. With approximately $1 billion capital expenditures last year, and with more than 6,000 staff members for the past 9 years. Under his leadership, El Paso won numerous state and national recognitions and executed a complete financial turnaround, eliminating a $7.8 million deficit, more than tripling the fund balance from $26 million in 2014 to the current amount of $163 million. He also assembled a team that achieved zero audit findings for the past 7 consecutive years, an important point as he walked into an external audit that identified 21 findings. Prior to El Paso, Mr. Gonzalez served as city manager for the city of Irving for more than 7 years, where he led that organization to the Malcolm Baldrige Award recognition. The Baldrige Award is the highest presidential award for leadership and management of an organization. Ronald Reagan put this award process in place to position private organizations to be more competitive. Today, this award process is open to the public sector as well. Irving remains the largest city to win this award. We believe adding Mr. Gonzalez to our team will add to what we have already accomplished in Midland and what we have planned. On that note, our future is bright as we enjoy a strong financial position with a healthy fund balance and a AAA bond rating. Council believes we are poised to make great strides in development, economic growth, and quality of life for our community. But improving the quality of life for our children tomorrow begins with bold leaders in Midland making the right choices today. The Midland City Council believes now is the time to lead Midland forward in a financially responsible way. We felt it was important to provide the public with some background of our hiring choice, as our choice meets the desires of our community. We know this because as part of our search for the next city manager, we conducted a community survey. One of the most clear and consistent responses we received from that survey was to make sure we hire a person who understands West Texas, who shares the values of our community, and who will view our community as his or her home. Additionally, we heard clearly from you that we need a city manager who will manage our taxpayer dollars, who will benefit the culture of city staff, and who will create and uphold a high standard of customer service within the city. As a native West Texan and with a proven track record in city management, with significant financial accomplishments and numerous improvements to customer service in several cities throughout Texas, Tommy Gonzalez meets those expectations of our community. Further, Mr. Gonzalez's reputation for success and past performance offer a strong framework for three major needs in our city. Broad economic development. Midland deserves a city manager who will be strategic and possess the ability to plan for and deliver on long-term economic strength, even in our oil and gas economy with an undulating plateau. In El Paso alone, Mr. Gonzalez delivered well over $1 billion in total transportation and community projects, saved the community more than $210 million, and secured $257 million in new project dollars. He has become an expert in Texas in working with state, federal, and private funding sources to optimize community projects. Long-range strategic planning, capital improvement programs, and financial tools to fund these long-range plans that require capital are at the top of Mr. Gonzalez's priority list. These plans will serve as a roadmap to help city staff, the Midland Development Corporation, and council to meet the growing needs of our community, as well as strategize how to best provide Midlanders with the wants they feel will better serve their quality of life. He will keep a close watch on our needs first and will work with the City Council to find creative ways to fund our many wants for the quality of life and quality of place. Downtown revitalization. The creation of Centennial Park drastically changed the downtown experience in Midland, as we have seen the area come alive. Restaurants, nightlife, parties, and events are a common occurrence and have added to the felt energy just walking through the downtown streets. However, Midlanders want more. Mr. Gonzalez played an integral role in the redevelopment of both Irving and El Paso. For a long time, the city of El Paso had a desire to increase the number of convention/conference hotel rooms in their downtown, but they had no plan. After Mr. Gonzalez introduced a concept utilized in Irving that provides tax relief, quality of life, place, and economic development opportunities that 72 Texas cities now benefit from, he brought that same funding concept to El Paso. The border city has now developed a new hotel in downtown, redeveloped a once boarded-up historic hotel that lay dormant for decades, and reinvested in yet another historic hotel. Today, El Paso has more than 1,000 rooms available for convention-style offerings they didn't have before. Add this to the Winterfest event and other downtown events that activate downtown for over 100 days per year, and you now have a happening downtown. In Irving, Mr. Gonzalez assisted in redeveloping the urban center in conjunction with the construction of the Toyota Music Factory adjacent to the Convention Center and Convention Center Hotel. In El Paso, his leadership in developing strong public-private partnerships led to the transformation of downtown, with a new, award-winning AAA ballpark, as well as a beautiful new children's museum. Mr. Gonzalez's desire to collaborate on downtown redevelopment and his historical success in this area will only serve to reinforce the growth we are currently experiencing around Centennial Park. A successful and flourishing downtown has been the vision of this council, as well as councils past. It is exciting to think we are on the precipice of seeing that vision become a reality. Excellent customer service. Mr. Gonzalez's leadership style, Lean Six Sigma expertise, and established metrics for staff workflow, accountability, and success will empower an already highly specialized and committed staff. This will ultimately provide proven, tangible growth in individuals, services departments provide, and city management that will focus on community needs. The City of Midland is fortunate to have a deep pool of highly qualified, hardworking staff members, four of whom were also strong finalists in our selection process. Those candidates deserve our utmost respect, praise, and admiration, as they are truly the embodiment of leadership and service. Their continued dedication to the people of Midland is commendable, and we are fortunate that they each have a deep desire to see our community thrive and grow. During Council's interviews with Mr. Gonzalez, he made it clear that staff development and proven results are paramount when running a successful city operation. Along with his own words, past employees, council members, and colleagues in the field of city management have given reference to his desire and ability to grow talent within the organizations in which he takes part. In both his time in Irving and El Paso, Mr. Gonzalez created cross-functional teams made up of different departmental disciplines. These groups assisted in breaking down silos within the organizations and created opportunities for people to lead, develop bonds across departments, and ultimately led to successful communication. Measures like this are sure to take our staff to the next level and provide an even better culture of excellence within customer service. In our July 11th council meeting at 10 a.m., we will receive public comment, as well as consider and have the opportunity to take action on an employment agreement with Mr. Gonzalez. As a council, we maintain a deep conviction that Midlanders deserve bold leadership which is willing to take swift and decisive action, commensurate with the community's immediate and future needs. We will promote an increased culture of excellence at City Hall, so that Midland can take pride in being one of the best managed cities in Texas. Our goal, ultimately, is to leave Midland better than we found it. This article is entitled Midland's Weather Report, 104 Degree Highs on the Way, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. According to the National Weather Service, 100 degree high temperatures return to the forecast with triple digits expected as early as Saturday. Following high temperatures of 99 degrees on Friday and 102 degrees on Saturday, highs of 104 degrees are expected on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. The last 100-degree day was June 29th, the last of 15 straight 100-degree days and 17 during the month of June. There is no rainfall expected during the 7-day forecast. The high temperature on Tuesday was 95 degrees, which is the typical average for July 4th in Midland. There has been 0.39 inches of rain in July at Midland International Airport. The total for the year is 1.79 inches, which is 4.4 inches less than the typical average in Midland through July 4th, 6.19 inches. This article is entitled A Review of the Stories from Midland's First Half of 2023. Midland's top stories include Madeline Molina Pantoja's death, the Trinity trial, and the announcement that Bass Pro Shops is coming to town. By the Midland Reporter-Telegram. 2023 is more than halfway done, and what a first half it was. There was much to celebrate in Midland, some reasons for concern, and little time to rest. There was news about bonds, business expansion, parks development, a lot, and government trials and tribulations. As it turned out, two Midland entities named two chief executives, and Midland ISD leadership dealt with a round of musical chairs. There was community enthusiasm for new businesses that had been promised in West and downtown Midland. There was also collective disappointment after the latest round of businesses that closed their doors for good. The one constant in Midland for decades, besides State Representative Tom Craddock, again flexed some muscle as more billion-dollar deals inside the Permian Basin showed the region isn't ready to slow down. As for Craddock, he again capably represented Midland and continues to through multiple special legislative sessions with more money resources for mental health in the region. He also authored an amendment that guarantees tens of millions of dollars in needed state funding for Midland ISD. Acquiring those education dollars, known as Transition Grant Formula Funds, is arguably the greatest need in our community right now. And Craddock again came through. At least we will be able to officially celebrate Craddock's achievement when the Senate does its job later this year. The following are top stories from the first half of 2023. Madeline's disappearance. A Midland man was arrested in May in connection to the disappearance of 20-year-old Madeline Molina Pantoja. Mario Juan Chacon Jr. is being charged with murder, a first-degree felony, and is being held in the Midland County Jail on a $3 million bond. Following Pantoja's disappearance on May 10th, there were protests downtown, and Midland Police Department used phone records to help locate Madeline's body and show that Chacon lied during questioning about her disappearance. Charges dropped against Trinity administrators. In April, charges were dropped against four Trinity School of Midland administrators previously indicted by a Midland grand jury for failing to make required child abuse reports and attempting to intentionally conceal those reports, a state felony. The dropping of charges followed problems that the Midland County District Attorney's Office had with the testimony of Midland Police Department Sergeant Jenny Alonzo. Government. Hogan Park divides council. A split Midland City Council voted down a potential $40 million makeover of Hogan Park. Citing long-term costs and having to turn the park over to a conservancy, council members promised, quote, Midland is not for sale, unquote, in saying no to the effort to upgrade the regional park in Northeast Midland. Permian Basin Quality of Life Conservancy had come forward to oversee the Hogan Park project. Backed by tens of millions of dollars from oil companies and foundations, the conservancy was set on turning Hogan into a signature park, much like Centennial Park downtown. The opposition to the park conservancy had gained steam during the mayoral race in 2022. Midland College hires Kennedy to replace Thomas. The Midland College Board selected Damon Kennedy as the fifth Midland College president in May. Kennedy will succeed Steve Thomas, who is set to retire in August. Kennedy, the vice president of instructional services, was one of three finalists, along with Thad Anglin, the president of Cisco Junior College, and Ian Rourke, Vice Chancellor of Workforce Development and Innovation at Pima Community College in Tucson, Arizona. Midland Health has new CEO. Stephen Bowerman was selected to replace Russell Myers as the Chief Executive Officer at Midland Health, it was reported in March. Myers has transitioned to a developmental role for the Midland Memorial Foundation, focusing on the completion of the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center and other projects. Bowerman joined Midland Health in 2009 as Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. His most recent role was President and Chief Operating Officer. Murray forced to step down. Midland ISD Board President Brian Murray was forced to step down as the District 7 representative in June because of a state nepotism law that doesn't allow his sons to start work for MISD if he is on the board. The two accepted positions to teach and coach football at Legacy High School. Murray had served as the elected representative of District 7, generally Northwest Midland, for 6.5 years, and as board president since January 2021. Murray stated he looks, quote, forward to running for the seat again as soon as it is legally possible, unquote. Horseshoe operator's contract is terminated. The Midland County Commissioner's Court, by a split vote, terminated the contract of Horseshoe Hospitality Services in May, and then hired Ken Olson in June to manage the multipurpose complex in South Midland. A mediation session is set on July 14th to take place between Joe Kelly of Horseshoe Hospitality Services and Midland County regarding Horseshoe Hospitality's contract termination. City releases Animal Services Director. The Midland City Council was bombarded with comments from those with animal rescues and other community members concerned with the departure of Animal Services Director Ty Coleman in April. The City of Midland released Coleman after, quote, he did not meet probation, unquote. The City of Midland announced last week it has hired a woman to become the next director, and she will start in August. The woman's name has not been released. MISD staff exodus, replacements from Odessa. Turnover after a superintendent arrives in a district is expected, but the turnover following Stephanie Howard's arrival at Midland ISD was noteworthy nevertheless. In April, former Superintendent Angelica Ramsey hired 6 MISD officials to bring the total number of former MISD employees she hired to Fort Worth ISD to at least 9. Howard also went to a place she was familiar with to hire members of her new leadership team. At least 10 former Ector County ISD officials joined Howard's executive team in Midland, a number that does not include principals she lured to Midland over the first 6 months of 2023. Development. Bass Pro Shops is coming. Midland City leaders approved millions of dollars in property tax and sales tax abatements and dedicated $5 million in infrastructure payments to the building of an entertainment and retail center in Northwest Midland. In March, it was announced that work helped lure Bass Pro Shops to that venue. The plan is that the $45 million entertainment retail complex on 17.345 acres northwest of the intersection of State Highway 191 and State Highway 158. Charles Hodges of Hodges Development Services said the Bass Pro Shops will be a 65,000-square-foot store. There also will be a 60,000-square-foot pad for a 2-story family cinema and entertainment center, complete with an outdoor music and event stage, and platted lots for other general retailers and restaurants. Not one, but 2 indoor athletic centers. During the first 6 months of 2023, it was announced that indoor athletic centers, unlike anything Midland has right now, will be built in West Midland and Northwest Midland, respectively. In March, the Midland City Council voted on providing land at the Scarborough Sports Complex for the Midland Athletic Syndicate, a nonprofit organization, to build a 103,000-square-foot facility that will house 6 full-size basketball courts, 12 volleyball courts, and indoor soccer space. Estimates are such a facility will cost up to $30 million. And the syndicate anticipates the money will be raised privately. In May, the council voted to approve the MDC's spending of $995,000 on the $11.2 million Bush Ace Athletic Center, planned for the east side of Bush Tennis Center at 5700 Briarwood Avenue. The Ace Athletic Center will be an athletic and training facility with 5 indoor basketball courts, a 50-year indoor turf field, and 8,000-square-foot high-performance training facility. Ski Skeller is closing. After 54 years of serving the Midland outdoor sports community, Ski Skeller Sports will close its doors this week. The beloved mom-and-pop shop, located at 3327 West Wadley Avenue, has been Midland's go-to retail spot for outdoor sports enthusiasts. Scott and Gina Reagan, the business owners, made the decision to retire and move closer to their grandchildren, according to a press release. Dick Reagan first established the business in 1969. Another try at a downtown hotel. The City of Midland and the Midland Development Corporation are negotiating with a hotel developer on a $125 million to $140 million project. The latest attempt to bring a signature hotel to the downtown area went before the council in May. Midland Downtown Renaissance LP was the selected proposal based on a scoring criteria. The project to be built is a 135-key high-quality hotel and parking on land to the west of Centennial Park. Items to be negotiated include hotel occupancy tax rebates, sales tax rebates, property tax rebates, the waiving of fees, and cash incentives. Garlic Press closes. The Garlic Press restaurant on Wadley Avenue closed in May after 24 years in Midland. In February, the Garlic Press had stopped serving brunch. Business. Midland billionaires. A second Midlander appeared on the Bloomberg list of billionaires. Autry Stevens, founder of Endeavor Energy Resources, again made the list with a net worth of $10 billion. And a ranking of 182nd in the world, down from 197th last year. Tim Dunn, founder of CrownQuest, made his first appearance on the list with $1.3 billion, ranking 2,133rd worldwide. Billions flow into Permian through acquisitions. Despite limited access to traditional capital sources, oil and gas companies found a way to make billions in acquisitions of Permian Basin producers in the first half of 2023. Civitas Resources, a player in the DJ Basin play, is entering the Permian Basin, spending $4.7 billion to purchase the assets of Hibernia Energy 3 and Taprock Resources, giving the company properties in both the Delaware and Midland basins. In addition, Ovintiv has found investor support for its $4.2 billion acquisition of not one but 3 NCAP Investments portfolio companies: Black Swan Oil and Gas, Petro Legacy Energy, and Piedra Resources. It's Ovintiv's largest acquisition since its 2018 acquisition of Newfield Exploration for $7.7 billion. The longtime friendship between Amarillo natives Joe Foran, founder and CEO of Matador Resources, and Gary Peterson, founder of NCAP Investments, yielded a deal for Matador to acquire the NCAP portfolio company, Advance Energy Partners, for $1.6 billion. Not all acquisitions were oil-related. Bill Kent, president of the Kent Companies, completed a deal to acquire Tom Thumb Food Stores, giving the Midland-based company 14 stores throughout Florida. Pioneers Sheffield is ready for retirement. When Scott Sheffield agreed in 2019 to return to his post as Chief Executive Officer of Pioneer Natural Resources, it would be for 3 years. Nearing 71 years, he told the board it was time to focus on the succession plan, which will see Rich Dealy, current President and Chief Operating Officer, to take on the role of CEO when Sheffield retires again at the end of the year. Rich is ready this year, Sheffield said, noting that the 7 months before his actual retirement is the same length of time as in 2016 when Tim Dove was chosen to succeed him. Analysts expect quick reaction to plunging gas prices. U.S. operators continue to be too proficient at producing natural gas, so the marketplace may be setting up a shock to the system to bring back balance between supply and demand. That shock is coming in the form of sub-$2 prices, which are now clearly in view, according to East Daily Analytics. The sub-$2 price is based on the sharp adjustment we believe the market will need to make to balance against demand and keep storage within the bounds of natural gas storage, about 4 trillion cubic feet. Rob Wilson, Vice President, Product at East Daily, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Perryman. Midland County will serve as center of activity through 2050. For decades, multiple projections have forecast the world had reached peak oil production. Those forecasts spread to the Permian Basin and down further to Midland County. Instead, notes economist Ray Perryman, production has defied expectations, with production for both the Permian Basin and Midland County already at record highs. Midland County has dominated the state as the top oil-producing county in Texas, yielding 15.24 million barrels in November, the most recent month available. Despite massive gains in production, output in Midland County is currently 20 times higher than it was in 2009. Perryman notes oil reserves in the Permian Basin are more than 5 times higher, with natural gas reserve more than 6 times higher than previous levels. Astonishingly, shale gas reserves are more than 8,000 times higher than they were prior to the deployment of modern drilling methods, he notes. This pattern of increasing reserves shows no sign of dissipating. House Committee sees firsthand how energy communities matter. Members of the House Energy and Commerce Committee continued their travel to Midland to see firsthand how the region's oil and gas industry affects local economics and what impact expanding energy production, or lack of expansion, would have on local economies. Our primary energy objective is to ensure reliable, secure, and affordable delivery of energy to Americans, to their homes, to their businesses, the grocery store, and everywhere in between, Committee Chairwoman Kathy Rogers, Republican Washington, said in her opening statement. We must build upon our nation's diverse and abundant natural resources to create more secure supplies, more dependable power. We must work to develop a predictable regulatory landscape, one that unleashes America's unmatched genius for innovation and technical leadership. Energy communities matter, she continued, and the committee moved from its hearing room in Washington, D.C., to the nation's energy capital, Midland, to see where the nation's energy future begins, quote, in places like the Permian Basin. Sports. Coahoma softball wins Class 3A title. 1 year after finishing as the Class 3A state runner-up, the Coahoma softball team won the state title with a 4-2 victory over Kingsville Santa Gertrudis Academy in Austin in May. Sophomore Hannah Wells was named MVP after hitting a 2-run home run in the 7th inning and allowed 2 runs on 5 hits, 4 walks, and struck out 4 in the pitching circle. Wells finished with a 1.00 ERA in two state tournament games, which included a 1-0 victory over Reigns in the state semifinal game. Coahoma won its first state title since 1998 and finished with a 36-3 record. Andrews, Garden City girls win respective state golf titles. The Andrews girls golf team won the Class 4A state title, while the Garden City girls golf team won the Class 1A state title in May. Andrews won its 18th state title in the program's storied history, and the first since 2019, when the Lady Mustangs finished 46 shots ahead of Canyon at Legends Golf Course in Kingsland. Three Lady Mustangs finished in the top 10 individually, led by sophomore Emmy Darnold, who finished fourth. Senior Kylie McGowan was eighth, while fellow senior Peyton Manning was 10th. Meanwhile, on the same day, Garden City won its first state championship at Plum Creek Golf Course in Kyle to finish 42 shots ahead of district and region rival Therabest. Garden City was led by sophomore Riley Wood, who won a playoff to earn the individual silver medalist honor. Trey Arnold leads Chaps to Elite Eight finish in first season. First-year Midland College men's basketball coach Trey Arnold not only led the Chaparrals to their first postseason appearance since 2011, but led them to an Elite Eight finish at the NGCAA National Tournament in Hutchinson, Kansas, back in March. After upsetting WJCAC champions Odessa College in the Region 5 tournament semifinals, and then defeating Ranger College in the Region 5 title game in Wolfforth, the Chaps went into the national tournament as the number 8 seed and a first-round bye. Midland College, 28-7, defeated Chipola College in the second round before falling to number 1-ranked John A. Logan College in the quarterfinals. Midland Christian Baseball plays for state title. The Midland Christian baseball team made a run all the way to the Taps Division II state title game in Bobby Mesker's first year as head coach. The Mustangs fell in a heartbreaker to Beaumont Kelly Catholic at UT Arlington back in May in the title game. Midland Christian finished the season with a 24-12 record and saw an 11-game winning streak end in the title game. The Mustangs had defeated Fort Worth Christian in the state semifinal game. This article is entitled July 4th Children's Parade Takes Place by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A Midland tradition continued Tuesday as the 60th annual July 4th Children's Parade took place in downtown Midland. The parade is presented by the Colonel Thunis Day Chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. Gail Dodson again was the parade organizer, as she has been for around 50 years. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, July 5th. Mary Jacqueline McBride. Mary Jacqueline Jackie McBride left the cares of this world to spend eternity with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on Saturday, May 20th. Memorial service, 2 p.m. Saturday, July 8th, at Redeemer Christian Fellowship Church, 3000 Franklin Avenue in Midland. Jackie was born February 24th, 1928, to the late Luther Bland Foster and Lorna Tallman Foster in Shelbyville, Illinois. Jackie is preceded in death by her parents, Luther and Lorna Foster, husband John P. McBride, Jr., sons Patrick McBride and Terry J. McBride. She is survived by her children, Michael McBride, Christine Costin, Sherry Hart, Julie Bollinger and husband Donnie, 9 grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, and 3 great-great-grandchildren. Mary Robin Ritchie. Mary Robin Ritchie, 61, passed away on June 29th in Midland after a courageous six-month journey with pancreatic cancer. She was predeceased by her parents, Herbert L. Ritchie Jr. and Ida Mae McManus Ritchie, and her brother Peter Mitchell Ritchie, and is survived by her husband of 20 years, Gary T. Brednick, whose children and grandchildren she embraced as her own. Brothers Herbert L. Ritchie III, Jennifer, and Joseph P. Ritchie, Bunny. Six nieces and nephews, and 12 great-nieces and great-nephews. Robin was born in South Carolina and lived in Georgia, Maryland, Iowa, and Louisiana before settling in Texas as a young woman. There, she became a member of Golf Course Road Church of Christ in Midland and enjoyed a successful career as a banker. Services will be held on Thursday, July 6th at 3 p.m., with visitation from 1 to 3 p.m. at Golf Course Road Church of Christ in Midland, and on July 10th at 11 a.m. graveside in the Greenwich section of Bonaventure Cemetery in Savannah, Georgia. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Peggy Sue Jones Hahn, July 29, 1931 to June 19, 2023. Peggy was a beloved wife, daughter, Granny Peggy, Aunt Peg, and friend. Peggy Sue Jones Hahn was born on July 29, 1931 in Roscoe, Texas, to Jesse Fay and Woodrow Milton Jones. She died on June 19, 2023, a month away from her 92nd birthday. Peggy was preceded in death by her late husband, Lawrence Hahn, her parents, Fay and Woodrow Jones, and her three younger brothers, Jackie Jones, Bill Jones, and Jerry Jones. Left to cherish her memory are her three daughters, Signe, Namir, and husband David, Leslie Stanley, Lori Sherman, and husband Robert, nephew Leonard Jones, sister-in-law Charlotte Jones, seven grandchildren, and 9 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park in Midland. On Saturday, July 8th, lunch will be provided at 11 a.m. A celebration of life will be held in the Ellis Funeral Home Chapel at 12 p.m. with a graveside ceremony to follow at the Rest Haven Memorial Park Cemetery. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Death Notices. Cheryl Rico. Cheryl Rico, 67, of Midland, passed away June 29th. Viewing will be from 8 to 9 p.m. Friday, July 7th at the branch at NPW. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, July 8th at Mid-Cities on 191. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Three killed in weekend crashes. Three men died over the weekend in separate crashes in the Permian Basin. According to DPS Luis Eraldo Gutierrez, 32, of Heber, California, died in a two-vehicle wreck Friday at U.S. 285 and RM 652 in Reeves County. A preliminary investigation, Gutierrez blew through a stop sign while driving a Ford F-150 and struck a tractor-trailer being driven by a 24-year-old man from San Angelo, DPS said. Gutierrez, who was wearing a seatbelt, was pronounced dead at the scene of the crash, which happened shortly after midnight. Roughly 8 hours later, Vernon Brady Duggett, 22, of Moran, was killed in a two-vehicle wreck 20 miles east of Big Spring on State Highway 350. According to DPS, a preliminary investigation revealed a 33-year-old Glendale, Arizona man was traveling north in a tractor trailer when he veered into the southbound lanes for unknown reasons and hit Doggett, who was driving a Ford F-150. Doggett, who was wearing a seatbelt, was pronounced dead at the scene. The driver of the other vehicle was taken to Scenic Mountain Medical Center in stable condition. Kadoy Emmanuel Omotoso, 47, of Midland, died early Saturday morning in a two-vehicle crash 10 miles north of Lahora, according to DPS. Omotoso was traveling north on FM 829 when he veered into the southbound lane and his tractor trailer hit another tractor trailer at 3 a.m., DPS stated. Omotoso was wearing a seatbelt, was pronounced dead at the scene. The driver of the other vehicle, a 56-year-old man from Odessa, was taken to Midland Memorial Hospital in stable condition. Andrews, OC, partnering for automation program. While they're still in high school, Andrews students next fall will be able to earn an associate degree in automation through a partnership with Andrews ISD and Odessa College. Classes will be held at Odessa College, Andrews, formerly called the Andrews Business and Technology Center. AISD Director of Advanced Academics, Krista Scott, who also runs the Teacher Academy, said the district has been working to get the automation program started for a couple of years. Scott noted that students will be able to go on from their associate degree and earn a Bachelor of Applied Arts and Sciences, or BAAS degree, from OC. A lot of students that do automation are going to go to work in the oil field. It's a lot of the instrumentation and electronics that you see in the oil field. However, automation also plays a role in companies like Amazon and Pepsi. There's a lot of different organizations that automation affects, Scott said. The goal is to prepare students to get higher-level oil field jobs and enable them to earn skills that will make them workforce-ready. We have over 25 students interested. We are in the process right now of working with Odessa College to finalize our degree plan and to order the first year's worth of equipment. But we have had a lot of interest, Scott said. As she's launched programs before, she's had moms respond to them. This one's been kind of cool because the dads are excited. And I've had a lot of men reach out and say they've had great careers in automation. They're excited for our students to have the opportunity to get that training while they're in high school so they can get good jobs after high school, Scott said. These students can graduate with a level one certificate, a level two certificate, an associate degree, or a BAAS. Our students will graduate with the associates or a certificate, but they will have the opportunity, if they're interested, to complete the level one, level two, and associates, all of the coursework that goes into those pathways, so they'll be certified and ready by the time they're 17 or 18 years old, Scott said. She added that the opportunities that they are able to provide to students are exciting. Students can come out of the Teacher Academy and graduate college as a certified teacher when they're 19, for example, which is exciting but can sound a little scary. It definitely depends on the maturity of the student and the readiness of the student. We talk to them a lot about that. Like, if you go this route, you are going to be a professional in a professional field, and you're going to have to act like an adult and a professional, Scott said. But we give them a lot of mentoring and training to prepare them for that. Andrews ISD partners with OC to get students associate degrees and with Saul Ross State University for students to earn their bachelor's degree to teach. They also have an alternative certification route. The Saul Ross path has produced 8, but with the alternative certification, it will be closer to 18 this next fall. Next year, we have 9 students graduating from Saul Ross, Scott said. She noted that living in the Permian Basin, there is such a need to train workers who will stay in the region. When a student does what's called dual credit, they have to meet the requirements to graduate from high school. Then if they want to walk the stage or graduate with the certificate or a degree from Odessa College, they have to also meet Odessa College's requirements, Scott said. When word gets out about the program, she's hoping they'll get even more interest from students. I think that will continue to grow once they see the equipment and the programs and the hands-on learning, because it's not from a textbook. They will be working directly with the equipment like you would see in the oil field and in other industries, Scott said. Just their first year, a student learns all of the National Electrical Code, and they learn how to AC-DC circuits and stuff in that arena. They come out with a lot of hands-on opportunity. They don't spend time in textbooks. It's very applied, a very hands-on learning experience, she added. Scott said one of the things they are hoping to do is connect with industry and have some oil company representatives speak to students and help them see how what they are doing in the classroom will apply to a job in the real world. The licensed vocational nurse program is on the Odessa College Andrews campus. The teacher academy and automation programs will also be there. Scott said they are hoping to launch a fire academy in the fall. A parent meeting was set up for May 25th to determine interest. That would allow students to graduate with their fire license and their EMT basics license, Scott said. The Andrews Fire Department is volunteer, but she said they want to give students opportunities to work anywhere. Jonathan Fuentes, Vice President for Academic Partnerships at Odessa College, said having automation at Andrews ISD is going to be exciting and lead to lucrative careers for students. We know that the oil and gas industry is hiring in this field, and so we need to be producing more students from this area. By building a lab in the Andrews area, we know we'll be able to deliver more employees to the oil and gas industry, Fuentes said. Odessian takes silver medal in Texas State Judo Championships. On June 24th, Toby Blankenship traveled to Dallas and competed in the Texas State Judo Championships and placed second in the 15 to 17-year-old boys 73-kilogram weight division. Shooting after local festival leaves 3 dead and 8 injured in Texas. Dallas authorities in Texas say 3 people were killed and 8 people were injured when gunfire erupted following a local festival. The shooting in Fort Worth happened at about 11:47 p.m. Monday in the Como neighborhood of the city's southwest side, just hours after the end of the neighborhood's annual Como Fest. Police said shots were fired into a crowd of hundreds of people. Responding officers found multiple victims in a parking lot, including one pronounced dead at the scene. Other victims were transported to local hospitals by ambulance or private vehicles. One of the 11 victims is a juvenile, police said. No arrests have been made as of Tuesday morning. It was also unclear how many people may have opened fire. Como Fest is the Independence Day celebration for Fort Worth's Como neighborhood, a historically black community. In 2021, a shooting at the celebration wounded 8. In Philadelphia on Monday night, a heavily armed gunman in a bulletproof vest opened fire on the city's streets, killing 5 people and wounding 2 boys before surrendering, police there said. On Sunday in Baltimore, 2 people were killed and 28 others were wounded in a shooting at a holiday weekend block party. Midland College Board of Trustees accepts contract for new president. The Midland College Board of Trustees accepted Dr. Damon Kennedy's contract as the 5th president of MC at the June 27, 2023 MC Board of Trustees meeting. Effective July 1, 2023, Dr. Kennedy assumed his role as the college president. Previously, Kennedy served as Vice President of International Services at MC. His approximately 20-year tenure at MC also includes service as Dean of the Social and Behavioral Sciences and Business Division, Professor of History, and Adjunct Professor of History. Dr. Kennedy earned a Doctor of Philosophy degree in American History from Texas Tech University in Lubbock and Master of Arts and Bachelor of Arts degrees in American History from the University of Texas Permian Basin in Odessa. Missing Texas Man Found Alive. A Texas man who went missing as a teenager in 2015 after last being seen walking his dogs in Houston has been found alive, his family and police said Monday. Police and firefighters found Rudolph Ferraz IV around 10 p.m. Thursday after getting a call of a person lying on the ground in front of a church in southeast Houston, police spokesman John Cannon said. It was not immediately known where Ferraz had been the last 8 years, Cannon said. Police investigators had not yet spoken with Ferraz, 25, who remained hospitalized. What we do know is at the time of his recovery, a Good Samaritan located him unresponsive and immediately called police at 911. My son Rudy is receiving the care he needs to overcome his trauma, but at this time he is nonverbal and not able to communicate with us, Janie Santana, Ferraz's mother said in a statement. In a tweet Monday afternoon, Houston police said it planned on speaking with Ferraz and his family on Wednesday. The news that Ferraz had been found was first reported in a tweet on Saturday by the Texas Center for the Missing, which was handling public communications on behalf of Ferraz's family. We do know when a loved one goes missing, this is the day all families hope for and dream of, reunification. We are thankful that Rudy has been found and receiving the care he needs, the center said in a statement on Monday. Ferraz was 17 years old when he was reported missing on March the 6th, 2015, after taking his two dogs for a walk near his family's home in northeast Houston. The dogs were later found. Houston police, along with Texas EcuSearch, a civilian search and recovery team, looked for Ferraz but found no signs of him. When Ferraz first went missing, Texas EcuSearch reported that he suffered from depression and anxiety, and he might have been disoriented because he wasn't taking his medication. Ferraz also had asthma and walked with a slight limp because of an injured right leg. According to his mother, he is very wary around strangers, Texas EcuSearch said in 2015. Cannon said Ferraz's family did report to police investigators that they had seen him in September 2018 staying behind the home of a relative. Police investigators followed up on the 2018 sighting and went to the relative's home, but they could not observe him. They could not locate him, Cannon said. Since police were not able to find Ferraz after the 2018 sighting, the investigation remained open as a missing persons case, Cannon said. Possible sightings, like the one Houston police followed up in 2018, were common in the case, said Martin Renterra, a private investigator with Checkmate Investigative Field Services in suburban Houston, who had been hired by Ferraz's mother a few months after Ferraz went missing. Renterra called at least a dozen such reports that turned up nothing. Renterra, who worked the case with his wife Barbara, also followed up on possible sightings in other cities. After a couple years, we finally just had to give up on it, Ratira said Monday. He added he also considered that Ferraz, who had become an adult in the time he was missing, might have run away and didn't want to be found. Santana and other family members were not available for comment on Monday. We are asking for privacy during this difficult time, but we'll share more details as Rudy continues to heal, Santana said in her statement.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.